Okay. Resuming the interview here, the question of how you what your education was. You referred to having a bachelor's degree in a Bachelor of Science in Chemistry, and we're interested in how that came to be.
I loved chemistry in high school. My grade 13 teacher was John Francie, and his classes were so much fun. I enjoyed the topic and did well in it.
And so that prepared you to, you went to Lakehead?
Waterloo.
Oh, Waterloo. Mm-hmm. I see. Well, you're going to the science center of the province, I suppose, at Waterloo.
Yeah, I enrolled in the cooperative program there. And I didn't remain in that program past second year, but...
Did that have you working in industry then, the cooperative program as well?
As a co-op student, I worked for Sherwin-Williams in Montreal.
Paints?
Yeah.
Well, what did you do for them? Anything that prepared you for Ogilvy's?
Basically, I was a technician in their various labs. They had a research and development center there, and for the first semester, I helped the analytical chemist. And then the next two semesters, they gave me projects to carry out for the length of the work terms.
I see.
Well, they were interesting and really useful.
And they were benefiting from your being there, I suppose, because giving you these assignments.
Mm-hmm.
Owen?
Yeah.
You said you liked chemistry. What did you like about chemistry?
Blowing things up. That's the male caricature of chemistry.
I guess it was just just learning the characteristics of the different elements and how they could be combined in different ways for different purposes.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a preference amongst the branches of chemistry?
Organic and biochemistry.
So this is the chemistry of carbon in the broad, it's about that deep.
I wasn't as strong in the mathematics areas, and so physics and physical chemistry were tougher for me, and I didn't find them as interesting.
But what you can do with carbon, organic chemistry has been such an incredible area, part of the discipline, as I understand it, all the various compounds that have been developed. All the stuff nature never
stuff
made.
Of life.
Well, yes, the stuff of life, of course, hydrocarbons and so on, but were you involved in concocting stuff to put out into the world as well?
Not on a molecular level, but probably at Ogilvy I was mainly involved in developing procedures and working with new equipment and establishing how we would use it.
Would you have been the best equipped employee in the lab at Ogilvy's?
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the technicians there is Andrew Parks. He works for Canada Malting. Okay. And his first area of expertise was as a brewmaster. I'm trying to remember the name of that little brewing company that started up in Thunder Bay early 1990s. Mm-hmm. Renegade?
Okay.
Yeah.
You're closer to the beers,
he was the brewer.
He made the mix. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's interesting to know.
As an interesting anecdote, I have a friend who was a chemist, and he worked for Procter & Gamble, and they were concerned that somebody had invented Cool Whip, so they told him to invent an equivalent for their particular company, and he invented Dream Whip, of all the things he's ever and in my stomach.
And I suppose Dream Whip isn't different from Cool Whip.
Well, it's over. It's probably now extinct, but I'm old enough to remember it.
While I was there, a number of new pieces of equipment were brought on board, and I was lucky enough to be the one who worked with the suppliers of this equipment and learned how to operate the machines and develop procedures to be used in our plant.
That would be very interesting work. Why did the mill, the plant, finally close in the first time?
The cost of flour just became very prohibitive. It's an old plant. When ADM was looking to streamline things to make themselves more profitable, they looked at the oldest plant.
And this was from Ogilvy's. I don't know if it was Ogilvy still in the flour business. They were, but they were prepared to let this go to someone else, and, because I guess they had, may have faced similar cost pressures. You know much about the market for your products? Were others setting the prices in such a way that they couldn't cover costs by increasing the price of starch, for example?
I think it was very competitive. Australia was producing a lot of grain, wheat at that time. Europe was had started to produce quite heavily too, and they were subsidized, I think.
Yes, the Europeans certainly were, and I guess that if the raw material is cheaper, so the starch would be imported from Australia and Europe as well. The Canadian plants would.
And the gluten.
Yes. Yeah. Of course, this, I don't know whether the free trade agreement, NAFTA, that's of course North American only, but duties were coming down generally, so I suppose if the Canadian industry had been losing that in the 1990s, it closed in 96, didn't you say?
Ogilvy's, ADM Ogilvy closed in 96.
Right. And then the other plant was
made an attempt.
Yes, rather like the rebirth of Shaw Bakery in the past decade that was not possible either, turned out unsuccessful. Well, we've been using the typical day question to explore your activities over the years, and I expect the questions in the brackets, what did you do, who did you interact with, what tools and equipment did you use, I suppose we could specify further, but we've done a pretty good job, I think, in your answers of covering those things. What would you like people to know about the work you did and the place you worked? You've said some things I think that fit into that, but if you face the question full bore.
It's a very general question. Food safety at our plant. I helped ensure that we were making a very good product, and I was proud of the product that we were making. And I knew that it was a really good product because at one point we did a study with gluten samples from all over the world, from Australia, from Europe, from the United States, and we submitted all of these samples to tests along with our own, and it was quite obvious that ours was the superior product. So we were proud of what we were making. It was it was good food.
Sure. That's known through the plant, I suppose, and everyone shares in that pride. Although
it's nice when you can take pride in what you're doing, what you're making.
Yes.
We are creating wealth.
Yes.
For ourselves.
It is the incomes that people derive from operation there. You're suggesting that over the 7 years of your employment there, the employment dropped by over half, I guess, if it went from 180 down to about 80, did you say?
No, it was about 115 when I started and down to 80.
Oh, so that's 35.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's not that many. Although, how did they do that?
They eliminated some middle management and just tried to streamline things a bit.
Because it'd be a limited... little you could do with the production operation, I suppose. It was probably fairly tautly run in terms of the people running the machines in the lab and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, that's certainly something that it's probably question eight. What are you most proud of in the work you did over the years? I think you've just been indicating that, although you might want, would you want to expand on anything at all? This is more general.
I think you asked what I liked about working at Ogilvy, and I guess one of the big things was the staff, the camaraderie amongst us. I was working with people who really enjoyed what they were doing as well, and you could tell. You could tell.
And
that people cared about what they were doing, and they cared about each other. When one of my colleagues had cancer and went through a lengthy period of treatment, we put together a benefit for her to help her make her mortgage payments. And
yeah. It was just across the whole.
And everybody from the plant attended this event.
And all the production workers as well.
Yeah.
And so
oh, yeah.
Was it, could one speak of it almost as a family in a way?
Yes, working together? I would say so.
And the management was in keeping with that.
For the people at the top and at the other end.
Was there one manager throughout that 7 years? Or
when I started, the plant manager was Norm Holman. And he was a man who worked his way up from being a sweeper in the warehouse, I believe,
really?
to become plant manager. He was very intelligent. Very good with people.
Loved the place.
He loved the place.
Yeah.
And when he retired, Linda Lusak became the plant manager, and she was the person who had originally hired me in the lab.
What was her position before she became manager? In charge of personnel or?
Quality assurance manager.
I see.
And she started as a technician.
And you were describing half a dozen or so managers. She was one of those. Did she? It was interesting to have a woman managing. Was this a bit of a surprise to have her move up to the plant manager?
It's very egalitarian.
Right.
And he called Linda the Iron Lady.
Was that justified?
Yes.
She was tough, eh?
She was very tough, very strong.
But fair, I suppose.
Oh, well, yeah.
Very much
I have nothing but respect for her.
Yes. Are they still with us?
Norm passed away a few years ago. Linda's just recently retired.
Someone else we might get in touch with.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, did she? Well, that's.
She could tell you a lot more about the history of Ogilvy and a lot more about the production side of things.
Yes, she wasn't involved with Riverside, I don't suppose.
No.
No.
She was to have been. You know, I really don't know what happened and why she didn't come on board as the plant manager again.
Somebody else's story.
Yeah.
Most about the work that you did.
Just the perhaps the variety of things that I did while I worked there. It wasn't, I was never bored.
Mm-hmm.
There were always new things happening, a crisis every day, you know, there's a lot of problem solving involved in the position, finding ways to make use of everything that we made, even if it was off spec.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe a crisis or two for the interest of the listeners? The most spectacular surprise I ever had.
Just think, customer complaints, for instance. Remember once one of our customers found pieces of a pan in a load of gluten. And
how did that happen?
People used to wear those little tacky pockets, or they carry pens and pencils in their breast pocket, and I think someone just bent over and it fell in and was crushed along the way. And
after that, those were ruled contraband.
Yeah, we just had to decide.
My fancy pen or a customer.
You couldn't walk around with those things anymore.
No.
Yeah. Try another, well, not a crisis, but a challenge was trying to get people to wear hairnets. Because we were a food manufacturer, after all.
Nothing glamorous about those, but mm-hmm. And I guess guys would have long hair, too, at times. Well, no matter what the length of hair, I guess you could.
Yeah.
And beards,
yeah,
too,
were,
yes.
There were, you know, and
some people have hairy beards.
Try and get some people to wear those things. I was involved in a sanitation committee, and things like that came up, and you know, it was the committee's responsibility to try and figure out, you know, how we were to get the message across. So we actually made a couple of videos.
Of what could happen?
Well, no, of the first one was just a day in the life of an operator, and started with him waking up in the morning to his alarm clock and having a shower. And going off to work in nice clean clothes and putting his nice clean uniform on, you know, right down to washing his hands after he'd used the washroom.
conveying the idea that all these things should be happening.
Yeah.
It was ahead of its time. It's like reality television.
It was fun making it.
What time would you have to start work every day?
I think my shifts were from 7 to 7.
Did you live on that side of town then, or were you on...
No, I was on this side. Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah, but then the scheduling changed over the years. For a while, we tried 10-hour shifts, and for quite a bit of time, I was working weekdays, 7 to 4 or whatever.
Yeah. It was the production... It was 12-hour shifts as mm-hmm. well, I guess.
Yeah, I think we only closed down for Christmas Day.
Right. Of course, what I wasn't calculating before is when you have 12-hour shifts, you're up to 48 hours in 4 days, or I guess mm-hmm. what would the, if the work week were less than, it would be less than 48 hours, I suppose.
Well, for me, you'd work 2 days, have 2 days off, work 3 days, have 3 days off. Sort of staggered like that, yeah.
Just days, fortunately. The brutality comes when people have to shift from
day
to night.
We didn't have a night shift until Riverside happened.
And then they tried that too, did they?
Yeah. It was quite difficult with just two of us to begin with. Well, me at first, and then Stella came on board, and we took turns working day and nights.
Heavier production levels as well?
Were you producing as much?
That Riverside never was able to achieve the same production levels because they were just operating 5 days a week.
Okay.
They lost a lot of time. Startup is... you can't just start up. It's a gradual thing. It takes at least 8 hours mm-hmm. to get up to steam.
Did the plant operate 365 days of the year then as well, through Christmas Day and so on?
Oglesby's shut down for Christmas Day.
For a day.
For a day. Maybe it was closer to 2 days.
Or the Boxing Day as well, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at one time Oglesby's was owned by Labatt's. It was owned by Labatt's when I started there. And there was the tradition on Christmas Eve of stopping at noon, closing the plant down at noon, and then we'd have a big lunch and the Bat's beer.
That
happened for several years until one year somebody hit a train leaving work. We had to cross railroad tracks to get out to Syndicate.
These are marvelous traditions, and then someone spoils it.
Yeah, somebody spoiled it.
Was there other... Were there other social activities among the Ogilvy family, shall I say?
The Christmas party, the different tournaments. We had a curling bonspiel once a year, and there were
amongst
fishing.
The workers,
mm-hmm.
the employees.
Yeah.
And fishing?
Yeah.
I see. So was there a committee responsible for the social round of the year?
I don't know. I think just whoever was interested would help out.
Sure. Yeah, well, these things will happen.
And we had a charity committee. Employees could designate whether or not they wanted a certain amount of money taken off their paycheck to go to charities, and so the committee would decide which charities that money would go to.
Right. United Way, I suppose.
Eventually, it all went to United Way. There was a lot of contentious issue.
Because there would be people who would have favorite charities they'd want to support.
Mm-hmm.
This was now being imposed on the entire workforce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can imagine.
I'm trying to think of other things. It seems to me, within the lab and administration, there were a lot of other social events happening.
So each of the managers, I suppose, would have a secretary or an assistant, or was there a secretarial pool?
There were three administrative staff helping the plant manager
mm-hmm.
at one time.
At the best time.
Yeah, and there were more employees.
Yes. And so you'd have... The union representing was the grain handlers, Lodge 650, do you know, would you say?
Herb Danaher was
there,
in
there. That's Lodge 650
mm-hmm.
of the grain handlers.
Yeah.
Right. One of the other questions is, do you think that the work you did contributed to Canada's success as an international grain trader? Now, that doesn't immediately apply.
No.
You were in a business that competed with international traders as well. Although, did some of the products leave the country, do you know?
Oh, they did.
So you were
mm-hmm.
involved in a global
mm-hmm.
business or market.
At one time, we sent some off-spec material to Thailand to be fed to shrimp.
Right. Well, shrimp need to eat too, don't they?
Mm.
Along with pigs and other critters that will enjoy the product.
Mm.
Is there...
Most of our products remain within North America.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a sense that ADM's purchase of it expanded markets in the United States? Were you in competition, or again, would you know, with operations
ADM had their own operations.
How long did they operate this particular plant?
Might have been 3 years.
Was it as much as three
yeah.
years? Because sometimes, of course, these acquisitions are really part and parcel of reducing competition. They operate them for a little while and then shut them
yeah.
down.
I think the trade secrets were another factor.
You had some here that they were acquiring,
mm-hmm.
and which were then transferred to other operations.
Yeah.
Could you describe any of that? It's not so secret that you can't just say, I suppose, what sorts of things that involved. Or was it?
I think it would just be the production model and perhaps... one of the factors used in making gluten.
Part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Do you have any knowledge of how old that plant was as an industrial?
It was built in 46.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You were saying just after the war.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder whether there was a new development in industry at the time that it was discovered how one could make additional uses.
Yeah, I think it was a few years after that another industrial grain plant was built in Candiac, Quebec,
mm-hmm.
near Montreal.
And you were saying that
these two plants were called industrial grain products. They were a part of Ogilvy's.
IGP are initials thinking I was mouthing a name I've seen before.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Describe any connections you see between your work and the work of farmers growing the grain handled in the grain trade. Now, the dear ladies in Winnipeg who drew up these questions. That's what a lovely...
Could you repeat that?
I hesitate to do so because I want to answer it myself, really. I mean, describe any connections you see between your work and the work of farmers growing the grain handled in the grain trade.
Well, we were providing another use for the grain that is grown on the prairies.
Yes. And I was thinking...
Value-added. It was a value-added product.
Very definitely.
Especially some of the industrial starches, the ones used for the paper industry or for adhesives.
Yeah.
Very, very much value-added.
And I was thinking about the fact that if it's soon after the war, with the kind of war monopoly, I suppose, that Canadian wheat probably had in Britain and other suppliers, as Europe begins to recover, the Canadian farmers faced difficulties in getting a good return on their wheat, as I vaguely remember at the international wheat agreements of the time that were mm-hmm. quite contentious. And so mm-hmm. for Ogilvy's to come up with another way of using flour, processing it into industrial products, would certainly make sense. And 47 is nicely timed to that after the war ended in the fall of 1945.
What sort of grade be used in your flour for it to be most efficient with the byproducts you were producing at the end? Was it a high-grade flour or was it an industrial use flour? I'm not sure. I don't know.
It was a lower-grade flour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which then could take us back to a flour that was made from... You have a sense that of what would happen in Medicine Hat? Would they be separating out the higher quality? Would it be based on the kind of...
They do. They have different streams.
In the
milling
kind of
process, and
in.
I knew all of this at one time, but I've forgotten.
But your sense is that, say, they would have different qualities of wheat, and it would be milling lower grade wheat as well as the highest grade wheat, the lower grade wheat then would produce the raw material for your operation.
Yeah, there were variations in the milling process too.
Mm-hmm.
To get certain desired effects.
Right. We haven't really talked very much or had people to interview in regard to flour production because there wasn't anyone producing flour here in the city, and I'm not sure that, I don't know that the team in Winnipeg is.
There is now.
There is now, yes.
Yeah, there is a modest operation, is there not?
Yeah.
No one retired from that yet. We may have to get a little closer to people still working.
I have a question again, there, Neil. Sorry,
please, by all means.
It's a different area, but when you left, did you retire or did you move on to other areas where your expertise was a help?
I moved to a company called Nesty Resins. It's
plastics.
It was a plant across the street from Bombardier. And they were a chemical producer. They manufactured formaldehyde and formaldehyde resins.
And formaldehyde would be, it's a preservative?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's it used for these days?
Oh, it's used for all kinds of things. We were making resins for the board industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's like glues,
yeah.
Urea resins, and urea formaldehyde resins, and phenol formaldehyde resins, used in plywood, chipboard.
Yeah. In fact, it was used in insulation at one unhappy time 40 years ago, wasn't it?
There's different, you know those little green scrubbies?
Oh, yes.
Swiffer?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Well,
the same, rather than...
That kind of resin is used to make...
Rather than steel wool, but the plastic equivalent of steel wool.
Yeah, it's... they use that kind of resin for those products and also for different kinds of filters. You know, your furnace filters, perhaps.
Yeah.
Some of them might have that kind of thing in them.
Mm-hmm.
They're used in fake wood dashboards in cars, in furniture making, flooring, curtains, wallboard, all kinds of things.
How long did you work there?
15 years.
Oh, right. Until the final retirement.
Well, that plant closed down too. I've been really unlucky. I worked for Terra Scientific for a while, and they also shut down.
Terra Scientific?
Yeah. It was a little analytical lab. And, well, anyways, it shut down, and at that point I just had a few years to go until I could retire, and so I went to China and taught oral English for 3 semesters.
That's not shutting down.
No.
With
no,
millions of Chinese to learn English.
Yeah, and apparently I could have stayed there forever if I wanted.
Our son brought the parents of a Chinese girl he's come to know in Winnipeg to the city just a couple of weeks ago from the Beijing area. And they have a lot of English to learn, both of them. The father has a bit. There are questions about changes, challenges, and so on. Let's take our way through those. What major changes did you see in your job and the trade over the years? Now, that envisaged people working in the elevators or what have you over a lifetime. But you've seen changes. You've seen the closure of 2 operations. But there may be other changes as well. Major changes did you see? The processes themselves, I suppose.
Very little changed as far as the process was concerned.
Well-established processes that kept on going.
The plant as a whole tried to streamline itself to, as I said, middle management was laid off to a certain extent.
Did you feel a loss to the quality of the operation with the loss of the middle managers?
Not to the operation per se, but there was a loss in morale. When you work somewhere that's down, so it goes through several downsizes, people become very worried about their own position. They suffer from survivor guilt, you know, my job was saved, but his was lost. People just weren't as comfortable there because they felt insecure.
Mm-hmm. It will impact morale without a doubt. I guess what I'm wondering, misguided perhaps, whether these middle managers brought something to the operation that was now a serious loss, or whether it might have been a mistake to create those positions initially. Do you have any opinion on that?
It's hard to say.
Yeah, depending on what it is, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Middle management is a challenging area.
One thing that was happening during the years that I was there was that safety had become much more important. And a lot of the pressures came from outside.
Yeah. Now, there's bound to be some ambivalence about the WIMA system.
Well, a lot of it was good. There were barrels of unlabeled materials all over the plant, and they just sat there for years and years and years, and they weren't being used. They weren't important to the operation, and so it was good that we were forced to.
Did you get a sense of what brought about the WIMIS institution? Because this was an Ontario government regulation, not unique in the world, I'm sure. But did you get any sense of how it came to be?
I think it was because of accidents that happened in various workplaces. People were hurt.
At a workers' comp, to some extent.
And there came the realization that if employees had known what they were working with, they would have been more careful, they would have protected themselves.
Yes.
And the accidents wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. So workers can inevitably be a bit blasé about things that are always around them. One of my assistants in Ottawa.
We're all like that.
She'd worked for a cabinet minister in the Saskatchewan government, and the PCB concern suddenly arose. The minister with at least one assistant in tow was down at the plant where they were building transformers. And of course, PCBs were part of the insulation inside, if you will. And they pulls it out of the PCBs to the pump, and that may have been quite safe, but it's a nice demonstration of how blasé workers can be about stuff that they're working with every day.
Well, we work with a lot of mercury thermometers, and there was also a mercury manometer in the boiler house, and thermometers would break, the mercury would go down into the trap, and there was one fellow who actually collected all that mercury and brought it home and kept it in his garage. And, you know, he'd show it to the neighborhood children, to his grandchildren. Hey, you want to play with this? You know, they're playing with mercury balls in their hands.
But if it ever gets into the body.
Well, it does.
It's a killer.
You inhale it.
Yeah.
And it's very dangerous. It's a designated substance, and that one of my jobs was to
monitor,
write the designated substances protocol for the plant and do training with all the employees.
So you do the research, write it all up, and then have a classroom of employees in which you were briefing them then, wasn't it?
Yeah. So
prepared you for teaching English at a later date.
Mm-hmm. Then when we were operating as a Riverside, just some horrible things happened with chemicals. It was just, we hadn't really been able to get a safety committee going, and we had all of these new young employees, and I just walked through and see things. You know, he's handling concentrated sulfuric acid without a bit of protection. Probably doesn't know that it could just eat right through his skin.
Yeah. Well, you weren't there very long. What impact did these changes have on your job and industry? We hadn't found many. The Wimbus being an example of made yours more interesting.
It made mine more interesting. It added a lot of variety to what I did. I was able to gain some skills that I hadn't had before, training employees in safety and in procedures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from the lab into the classroom. Speaking as a professor, who didn't have a lab, of course.
Yeah. While I was there, sanitation became very important as well. And there was a committee struck to look at various issues: rodent control, insect control. Sanitation of all our equipment.
The darn little four-leggeds will be in there, I guess. They're almost impossible to keep up, I suppose.
Yeah.
What can one do about mice
and
rats?
Well, block all the holes.
Yeah.
All the entry. We went through the whole plant and the warehouse, identifying all the portals of entry and issuing work orders.
So the carpenters came in and went to work, eh?
And instituting inspection of the product at various stages to make sure that there weren't any insects and that, you know, there weren't going to be any problems with anything else.
Almost calls for
bacteria,
a sealing of the entire plant or the process.
Yeah,
part
and
it
was a very old plant.
Yeah, it would be difficult to do.
Yeah.
Was it well air conditioned? Probably not.
No.
Air conditioning was cross drafts from the open windows, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was the plant itself built in about 47 then, or it wasn't installed in an older building? It was actually put up.
It was actually built.
Yeah.
Yeah, they attempted to build an elevator prior to that, and it fell into the river shortly after it was built.
That's the other collapse, the Ogilvy tip over.
When they built after that, there was a lot of reinforcement.
More pile driving.
Yeah.
Something else one could look into sometime.
What would a new plant be like if somebody were to build it from the ground up? Would it be, what major change would you see there? Not knowing what the old plant looked like.
Well, it would be built to modern codes as far as insulation and
did you have
ventilation.
Asbestos
pardon?
Asbestos, was that an issue at all? Or?
It was. Yeah, we had to go through the plant with a qualified person to identify all the asbestos. And,
did you just cloak the asbestos, or was it removed?
I think some of it was removed and some of it was coated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a place like St. Paul's, you had a church, for example, there's...
Right.
Yeah. And,
it's a really...
As long as it isn't friable, it's not floating in the air, that's the great concern.
You remember my house on College Street, built in 1907, the big old boiler. The asbestos cover on this boiler became friable, so we had to have it removed. And I hired a company that came in and built separate rooms, one around it and another room for them to change. And it was very expensive.
It's quite a process.
It took a whole week just to do that one boiler.
Yeah.
I was thinking of this, getting back to a new plant that could be almost totally automated, I would think.
Yeah, much more automated.
Yeah. But there's just no profit in building from the bottom up anymore, I would think, in something North America or something like that. So,
are there plants like this in Canada that you're aware of now?
The Candiac plant is still operating, as far as I know.
Was it built later than this one? And
yes, it was, but not that much later.
Probably not that different then, eh?
Your business, or?
And ADM's plants down in the States.
Okay.
Yeah, you've really lost it, in a sense, to the national economy when you sell to a foreign operator, Stelco.
Yeah, it's a very sad situation because Ogilvy Mills had tried to form a partnership with Maple Leaf Mills, and the Canadian government turned it down because of the Competition Bureau.
Yeah.
And then they allowed us to be bought by Archer Daniels Midland, who I think later formed a partnership with Maple Leaf Mills.
Depend on the era. Through the 70s, there probably was greater concern about
competition
than there was later.
At the time, became director on the board of Archer Daniels Midland.
Yes, I was just thinking, who are the new senators or board directors? So.
Which prime minister was this?
Brian Mulroney.
Well, Investment Canada, of course. Country's open. I'm very cynical. Well, besides dealing with change, what other challenges did you face on the job? You faced quite a few, given where you were.
It was a tough job. I remember when I first started as the process technician, I found it very difficult. It was 12 hours of nonstop activity, mainly on my feet. And I remember going home after the first few days and saying, I'm just going to give this a year, and if it doesn't get better, I can't keep on doing it. But it did get better. I got better, and I didn't stay in that position more than a year, I think.
Mm-hmm. And when you were promoted or moved to another function, you didn't have to spend as much time on your feet. It simply wasn't quite as demanding? Or?
Well, it was still really demanding, but it wasn't more involved in other facets,
mm-hmm.
purchasing, safety, sanitation, relieving the biochemist or the microbiologist and doing... the tests involved in monitoring our wastewater treatment plant.
You were treating it?
We were treating our effluent before it went to the city sewer.
Because there would still be quite a bit of organic matter in those.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When the plant was first operating, the effluent would go straight to the Kaministiquia River.
Yeah.
And
a lot of stuff went in the chemist for the 40s and 50s.
People didn't realize the damage that the biological oxygen demand would
cause. Right, and much later out of the Great Lakes paper mill, mm-hmm. that was still happening, wasn't it? I mean, we've had fish killed certainly into the 80s, if not later than that, mm-hmm. because of, as you say, of VOD.
Yeah. Yeah.
Above the River Dead, I guess.
So if you look at the site, you can still see our treatment plant. There were there was a the biggest tank is an anaerobic digester, and then there was a smaller aerobic one, which was open to the atmosphere, mm-hmm. and then finally a clarifier.
I see. So you had a three-stage. Can one relate this to primary, secondary, tertiary? Is it as it would be in a sewage plant? Or are the three tanks of the same? First of all,
well,
you remove
I
salt.
I can describe it in terms of reducing the BOD by 99%.
Really?
Well, maybe 97%.
But very good.
Very good, anyways.
Most of the mm-hmm. organic material was removed.
Yeah, yeah. And in the anaerobic digester, there's bacteria, mm-hmm. and they just broke all the bits of starch and debris from the wheat down and consumed it and produced methane gas, which we used to fire the boiler system for the plant.
Right. That's the sort of mm-hmm. thing that should happen.
Yeah.
That was in operation already when you arrived, I suppose.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And when Riverside reopened, they were never able to get it working properly.
You'd have to...
Or keep it working properly.
You'd buy the bacteria, I suppose, or... Or make... Grow them yourself.
I think when Riverside started up, we were able to get a couple of tanker truck loads of... bacteria from the Candiac plant. I'm pretty sure that's how we started.
Yeah. Maybe not enough of it then, I suppose.
No, we did get it going, mm-hmm. but to keep the bacteria healthy. The bacteria do not like changes. Changes in pH and temperature, and most importantly, in the amount of food that they get. And so if there's a sudden spike, it can kill them off, as in a spike caused by a spill.
Yeah. So the lab was monitoring the treatment plant as well, I suppose.
Yeah.
In fact, in a way.
Well, it required. Yeah. You have to monitor it and report it to the city and the Ministry of the Environment.
In terms of what was coming out of it at the end. Mm-hmm. So the aerobic simply... The oxygen from the air is allowed to work on what's in there, I suppose.
Yeah, it's bacteria that use oxygen, that require oxygen to function.
Bacteria,
so it's a different kind of bacteria.
Right. Yeah, actually in terms of the evolution of life on Earth, stuff I've learned from my environmental history, mm-hmm. the first tank is really that pre-oxygen atmosphere our planet presumably had, methogenic material, bacteria mm-hmm. and so on, and then the next tank you're in the later stage when oxygen appears and
yeah.
probably kills off an awful lot of the previous form of life on Earth, and then in the last tank does what did you say?
Clarifies it.
Yeah, so it's a matter of...
Settles all the solid matter down to the
right.
bottom of the tank.
And that's removed and...
Yeah, when we didn't do this at Riverside, we weren't operating long enough, but at Ogilvie's seems to me that once every year or two, we'd stop the operation and remove all the settled material.
And where would that go?
To the dump.
A lot of industrial stuff ends up in the dump, I fear, inevitably. Mm. I mean, that's what a city dump is for. That's why we want to discourage. Endeavor as the consumers to use as little as possible.
Challenges there for you. Were you able to leave the job on the job, or was it something like a 24/7 for you, where you were thinking about things that were going to happen tomorrow or that had happened? Is that catching where you're down?
Yeah.
Stop thinking about it when you go.
Well, sometimes you solve problems in your sleep. You know, thinking about something as you go to bed, and in the morning,
you got the solution. Well, it sounds like you're stimulated there anyways.
The mind is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. I think I remember that. So.
Joys of retirement.
Yeah.
What major changes do you think the grain industry faced over the years? I suppose we could recapitulate
the whole grain industry.
Yeah, let's just think about this part of it. IGP, what sorts of challenges it faced. You've referred, of course, to competitive pressures and cost of raw material, from which I infer limitations in the market,
the
inability
in
to
the
increase
price
the price.
And the costs of meeting environmental expectations, safety expectations.
It's interesting, those various things that would relate to what was then workers' compensation operations. In a little while, you left there in 96, and during those 2 or 3 years, I would think after the 95 provincial election, the Harris government would, of course, rename the board, the Workplace Safety and Insurance Board, and try to find ways of reducing the burden on corporations entirely, but that you probably didn't see much of that because it was probably happening after you, or did some of it begin to appear? I'm not sure whether the impact
of that could be felt
on the floor.
I know our premiums were very high. There were, we had a number of claims, back injuries and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There was a lot of manual labor required there, heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The consequences for the workers themselves and for the corporations trying to use the workers' comp system wisely, the cost will be high. Yeah.
I know Linda mentioned it several times that it was very, very difficult.
Yes.
And then we were owned by companies that were trying to maximize their profits and weren't inclined to put a lot of money into upgrading the plant.
It's one of those interesting things. We never have this connected with guaranteed annual income or in the Manitoba demonstration project of the 1970s with MinCom. But if we did have, one could take an enormous amount of the weight off industry generally, if instead of putting people into the workers' comp system, which is just over 100 years old now in Ontario, instead when we're able to provide the income people need by the wealth of the province generally rather than loading it on industries. It would be one of the arguments for MinCom that would be worth pursuing. And the only speech of Bob Ray's that I really remember is a speech of his to a provincial council meeting, and it must have been in 1989 because he wasn't a leader. Well, he was briefly earlier, but it was 89 or 90 that he made this speech about to provincial council of the Ontario NDP about a guaranteed annual income. And I don't remember whether he called it that, but a program that would basically replace so many income support programs the province had.
Vested interests to keep it the way it is.
Well, I would think there would be powerful interests in great reasons generally to displace the power of those. But a lot of it is short-sightedness. There's an enormous amount of right-wing economic short-sightedness around, so they don't think in terms of the way in which it can play itself out.
One thing that I noticed when I worked at, it was happening at Ogilvie's too, where the responsibility for safe work habits was a lot of the responsibility for that was laid at the hands of the worker, and I thought that was good, that there was a change in attitude there where it wasn't just the employer who was supposed to make sure that everybody was working safely, but the people working there themselves were also responsible.
It's an internal responsibility model, basically.
Yeah, and when I worked at Arklan, I was involved in a program called behavior-based awareness. Awareness-based behavior. And anyways, it involved people receiving training in thinking about where they're working, how they're working, what they're working with, who's around them. actually thinking about what they're doing and making decisions after assessing risks.
What has been generalized now is mindfulness, I think.
Yeah. We were able to cut our incident and accidents down considerably during the 4 years or so that I was involved with it. But the employees would be trained to go out into the plant and watch a colleague work and just look around for any hazards, any risks, and then have a discussion afterwards with that person if they noticed. When they noticed the good habits and the bad habits.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be positive as well as critical.
It was kind of a comradeship then of enhancing safety. So I always think myself that the first requirement is that the plant itself have a very high sort of safety quotient, or whatever phrase one uses, in terms of its design. It should be so laid out. And this, of course, is where the cleanliness of the operation comes up, because I'm tempted to bring forward two or three examples I've read over the years of Japanese engineers coming in to clean up operations in terms of bringing the Japanese model. And to have someone say that what it may well start with after the place has been thoroughly cleaned out is painting of lines and so on and so forth to demarcate work areas and so on and so forth properly, and then of course keeping everything clean in that sense. And this could have apparently astonishing impact on cost, remarkable reductions of cost take place in any kind of plant if you do those sorts of things, and the Japanese have learned to do them.
Yeah, it's just that it's, in theory, it's great. In actual practice, it's sometimes impossible.
Well, it depends. The Porsche plant is the one that I think of, where apparently they had put the parts for the assembly line. The parts were sort of lying indiscriminately in containers, wooden containers, so the workers had to step over and pull them out of these crates. It almost sounds as if they were in crates at this plant. Of course, when the Japanese engineers came in, that was just out of the question. And they ended up with little carts with the parts hanging on the carts. And as I don't know whether the carts moved or the automobile, something, when I say carts, one gets the sense that maybe these things were moving, perhaps moving with the assembly line, and the parts where you just had to reach over and pick it up and put it on. And they reduced the length of time to make a Porsche by something like 40%. I think it was an incredible increase in productivity by doing those sorts of things.
Talking about following up on the cleanup, what is happening on the site, if anything, at this point?
The plant and the warehouse were demolished, and the site is bare now. The only buildings remaining are the four silos, the wastewater treatment plant, and the office building, which is a heritage. Well, which
is
should
that
be
the old one,
the old Hudson's Bay store.
Yeah,
you know, that was our office.
Oh, so you actually worked right in there?
Yeah, and that's where the microbiologist worked as well.
I thought that was at one. Correct me if I'm wrong. That might be the oldest building in Thunder Bay. Still standing.
Extant, still standing.
Yeah.
I suppose that's possible.
So it takes you were right in there, so.
Yeah.
Your little wood stoves?
No.
What are your most vivid memories about the job? Working in the old Hudson's Bay?
Yeah.
That's another.
Should have a brass plaque on that, right?
We'd probably
Someone wrote
press
an article about it, and at the end of the article asked if anyone would be interested in helping to preserve it and to document everything that went on there. And I responded to this writer, but she never got back to me.
Friends?
I can get it for you.
She'll let my sister know. She'll take care of that problem for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nancy
will.
Her and I may be working on that project.
Friends of the HBC store, right?
Yeah, well, the manager's office had a fireplace in it, and the windows, the big windows in the front.
Yeah.
His washroom had a big bathtub with the clawed feet.
All right.
Oh, well.
24/7.
Well, we probably need to think of the last few questions. What are your most vivid memories about your job?
Uh, very good memories of sitting in this cramped little office with our torn up chairs, laughing and joking and just talking about what was going on in the plant, in the lab. Vivid memories. I have a vivid memory of having my morning coffee standing out on this deck overlooking the Kaministiquia River and a boat going under the Jackknife Bridge.
Yeah, it's a historical area.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun.
The smell. I love the smell of the place.
My dad worked at Old Lucy's for a number of years. He was a government grain inspector. And that was his favorite elevator to work out of.
Yeah. What would the aroma be? Is it based on the processing of the flour?
The smell of animal feed. It smelled like animal feed. It reminded, the first time I walked in there, it reminded me of a chicken coop. You know, the smell of grain?
Fermenting.
Yeah, and the smell of chlorine, the smell of Javex. I love the smell of Javex.
So this isn't necessarily a universal appreciation here, but for you it was quite terrific.
Yeah.
That's what I remember about the elevators. I worked in it in the summer, and I remember very little of what I was doing, but I remember the smells, you know, the wind, the sun. I worked outside a lot, but the grain smell, once you smell that, it's etched in your memory forever.
I guess my equivalent might be then the aroma of hay, drying grass, basically,
yeah, same thing,
perhaps,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sweet clovers and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Spotted that the other day, or felt it during the, smelled it around the house in the summertime one day. And, oh, wow, that is a great aroma. In your mind, what were the most important events that happened in the workplace during your career? This, again, is not 30 years in an elevator, obviously.
It's most important. Repeat it again.
What were the most important events that happened in the workplace during your career? One of them would be the Wemyss system, I'm sure, coming in.
I think you're right. The achievements with safety were very important. The times when it was we were congratulated on producing something that was very good.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a lot of contact with Ogilvy headquarters? Of course, the ADM came in, but before that, did people from Montreal come to visit?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And less of that with ADM, or did they show up?
They were still coming. Occasionally, people would come from Montreal for conferences or to help with something,
mm-hmm.
to touch base.
Were you yourself in touch with people at Candiac? Or at,
I was when I worked for Riverside.
Mm-hmm.
I had a contact.
Getting
advice. When we first started up, we wanted to know if the gluten that we were producing had the same protein content as theirs did. So we exchanged samples quite a bit, and we both labs ran the same tests on these samples and also do the same tests. And it was interesting to see that our results here in Thunder Bay were midway between those in Montreal and those at the Grain Commission. So, of course, we had to try and figure out why there was this discrepancy. And
did you find out?
Yeah, we did. We nailed it down to a procedure. The Grain Commission was using a combustion technique to measure the protein. We were using, and Candiac was using a catalyst, and it turned out that we were using different catalysts, so that was the difference.
Was there a decision on which was the best process, or did...
They were just different.
I see.
But, you know, once we realized that that was the factor,
yeah.
It wasn't an issue any longer.
When Riverside was reopened, were they aiming to compete in the Canadian market, or were they going to go up against ADM in the U.S.? Do you have a sense of
that? Probably the Canadian market. We wouldn't have wanted to compete directly with ADM because they have been reluctant to sell the plant for that reason. They didn't want a competitor.
You know if they actually wrote that into the agreement?
I don't know. Yeah. But that's the sense that I have.
They have been compelled to sell in Canada.
Just going back a bit, Darlene.
Yes.
Who was your contact at the Grain Commission? Was there somebody you worked with specifically there?
I can get you the name.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Just maybe phone Ernie. He only, one night, he only takes calls after midnight.
After midnight, I'm endeavoring to get my beauty sleep. You know?
Yeah.
No, that's, I just thought if you knew.
Yeah, it was.
Might be another contact
person. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the very last question. Do you, on the way to that, I don't know whether to ask you whether you feel it's important to preserve and share Thunder Bay's grain trade history?
I do.
You wouldn't be, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah,
you might be there.
I wouldn't be participating if I our histories.
Yeah. And this, since this is the first interview we've done in the Ogilvy context, we haven't, I don't think.
Probably.
Yeah, I don't. So you are really, you're establishing the state of the art here for
the benchmark.
Yeah, for this particular operation. Mm-hmm.
I just wish that I'd done this years earlier when my memory of what went on there was better.
You'll probably be remembering things over the next few days, thanks to the roiling of your memory that you've given, that we've imposed on you this afternoon.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts about aspects of the history that we should concentrate on preserving? Any thoughts about the physical site?
Yeah, that is one aspect of what the site was before the plant was built there, and a little bit about the Hudson's Bay store.
Mm-hmm. So the rest, is there any?
The silos remain because?
I don't know.
The cost
I think the city owns the property now.
They learned their lesson with Pool 6, probably.
It's very difficult to demolish an elevator, but those silos aren't built the same way.
They are not.
No.
No. No, I'm very sorry Pool 6 was taken down the way it was, or they could have left it as, you know, in the midpoint. Why not have a demonstration of how strong these things are as an example of kind of postmodern art? I'd have been tempted to leave the silos there.
They were, pieces of concrete were falling off the sides.
At Pool 6?
So that's the one next to Ogilvy's, right?
No, this is the one.
The one down at the waterfront.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there was that demolition attempt made.
The first one and then the second one. Well, that's something to think about. Are there any questions that you'd like to bounce off us and answer? Game plan, and I put it that way because having everything in perfect shape is the challenge, but they're being stored in the computer at Lakehead University, and the intention is to have them there in perpetuity. So, and we have agreement from the manager of the computer services for that purpose. So they are now, access to them is the issue, and I don't know whether I'm not up on that, and I don't suppose Owen is either. Nancy has had more contact recently, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but the elements of the previous interviews have been used publicly. So
we have had, yes, that's right, excerpts made. Did you see the exhibit down at the Mariners Hall in Marina Park?
I did, yeah.
Well, that, of course, was based on previous interviews. So, yes, the intention is certainly to preserve, and at some point I find myself more productive these days than I was in earlier years, believe it or not. And so I do want to get into the great history of the grain trade in a more lively way than I have in the past.
That's its Bay office already. Maybe I'll have to change my focus.
Next April, you're free to find a new focus. So the interviews will be cut off. You could have the summer off. You don't have any memorabilia, I don't suppose, from your time working there that you'd like to see preserved to commemorate the history of the grain trade and your part in it?
Just some newspaper clippings, and most of them are about reopening Riverside.
Well, if you've got the file on that, so tracking these things down is always labor intensive, but if you had the file and we could do photocopies of the article.
We've done that sort of stuff in the past with other people.
That would be very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we'd have that in hand immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have any memorabilia. When the plant closed down the first time, I took, with permission, I took the mortar and pestle that I'd used.
Didn't get the bathtub.
No. Just a little mortar. And then I couldn't take it with me when I left Riverside because they were still using it.
Yeah.
So I wish I had it.
Do you think it might be in there somewhere?
Well, it was probably destroyed in the fire.
Yeah,
everything was.
Yeah, I guess it was quite
nice. I'm hoping that Stella, my comrade there in the lab, at least salvaged the method books and some of the other things. She did that when the first time Ogilvy closed down, and she just snuck it out. Nobody knew about it, and then she brought it back when Riverside opened. And, why didn't anybody else think of something like that?
Do you have any thoughts about others we might interview? That's why I'm making it a little rough.
Linda Lusack.
Linda Lusack?
Yeah.
Lusack?
Lusczak.
Oh. Lusz?
Czz.
Czz.
A-K.
Oh, yeah. All those.
Her phone number.
We could probably cut off the recording at this point, I suppose.
Her husband's name.